All right. On this edition of Current Affairs Taiwan, we have quite a show coming up here for you. So what are we talking about this week, Mike?
Han Guoyu and the rally with Ho Yoyi.
Yeah.
And we're going to talk a little bit about campaign manager Eric Chu and some of the travails of the KMT.
Mm-hmm.
And a little bit on the economy. And one or two of the interesting local races.
Yep.
And then something about the economy. And finally, we're going to end with a little change of Taiwan news and the way they treat Xi Jinping.
That's right. Yes. With a little segue in there about, I think, Thais. Han saying that Thais look down on us.
Oh, that's right. We're doing that, too. And don't forget, report.tw.
Report.tw. Coming up.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another edition of Current Affairs Taiwan. I'm Michael Turton, and this is Dunham & Smith. And Dunham & Smith is here with a plug.
I'm here with a plug. Yes. All right. Just wanted to let you know that report.tw, the website that I mentioned last week, is really kind of up and running now. So if you go and you check out the website, you'll see the articles that we've been following throughout the week. And it's kind of a, if you go through the website, what you'll see is it's a series of, if you're interested in Taiwan politics or foreign affairs, you'll see that there's quotes that, you know, that I thought were particularly important from different articles. And then you can click on the links to go see the original source articles. There's also original commentary. Obviously, we post this up, but I've been posting up some Donovan's quick takes. They're kind of unpolished, short articles, sort of commenting on what's going on. Hopefully, you'll be putting up some stuff soon, too.
Should be.
And then there'll be some more content coming out, which is we'll tell you a little bit more about hopefully next week. Hopefully, that'll be up and running as well. There's a lot going on here. So if you're interested in Taiwan politics or foreign affairs, check out report.tw.
This is where I'm supposed to say that's report.tw.
That's right.
Okay. So, this week was a little slower than some weeks, so this might well be a short show.
Yeah. Okay.
So Han Guoyu was in the news. Han Guoyu, the Kuomintang KMT presidential candidate, was in the news this week. He was in Wall Street Journal denying that he was the pro-China candidate, blaming the DPP for a bad media coverage, and saying all his campaign stuff about how Taiwan is declining and all that good stuff. So he was also saying the same thing about the Thais, wasn't he? They look down on Taiwan now. Southeast Asians are looking down on Taiwan. This week he was talking about it.
Yeah, I actually wrote up on report.tw.
That's report.tw.
Yes, I wrote up a little short article on that. So he was saying that Thais look down on, he says they look down on us. And the reason for this is that the Thai government recently announced that they were going to demand that Taiwanese who want to visit Thailand, they have to show a financial statement from the last 3 months. Basically, they got enough money to make the trip and go home. Well, it turns out that they're implementing the same thing for people from France and Germany and, you know, some other countries. So they're not specifically picking on Taiwanese. It's a bunch of countries. And so he came out and said the Thais are looking down on us. It's because Taiwan's declining and our economy terrible and all that good stuff, as you put it.
Right.
And so now what I think is interesting about this is this is the same guy who calls Filipinas Marias, which is a not a very nice term for Filipina women, mostly who often are caregivers or here in Taiwan. And he's used it multiple times. So it's considered a racist term. And, you know, so now he uses this terminology that Thais are looking down. I think there's a bit of a history behind this.
Yeah.
Sure. Why don't you take it away? I mean, you know this as well as I do.
Well, as you noted on the report, this situation used to be the reverse, right? Mm-hmm. Philippines used to be richer than Taiwan. Mm-hmm. Taiwanese used to go down to Philippines to find work.
Right.
Yeah. So this thing where it actually speaks to the insecurity of these people who now look down on Southeast Asians. Right. And now, oh my God, they might be looking down on us.
Oh, the oh, loss no. of face. Yeah.
So, but that's, hopefully that will change as more Taiwanese go out into Southeast Asia, not just to the countries that have been popular like Thailand, but apparently there's a large business in community in Indonesia and now Burma and several other places. So hopefully all this will change. And of course, as we both have been noting in our respective writings, this is the best, this young generation, this generation of young Taiwanese is probably the best generation of young people that Taiwan has ever produced.
Yes.
They're traveled, they're cosmopolitan, they have some dim idea of the world out there. And I'm looking forward to the future of Taiwan.
Yeah, and I think this is a big generational difference between Han's followers who, they remember Taiwan being poor.
Right. When they were very little.
Right. And their generation, the one before them, produced a wave of newly rich, not very classy business types who would go out, generally these men who go out and flaunted their wealth as ostentatiously as possible. And for a while, through the 80s and 90s, and into the early 2000s even, in Southeast Asia and in China, Taiwanese had this awful reputation.
Right.
For just being terrible employers, flashy, arrogant, and so it was a really terrible reputation. Now, young Taiwanese, and so the older generations and a lot of these Han supporters, they have the insecurities of that era.
Right.
And, you know, they felt the need to be so ostentatious. Young Taiwanese aren't even aware of this, or if they do, I mean, they don't remember it. And they a lot of them probably aren't even aware of this.
Right.
They grew up in a world where Taiwanese are fairly well respected and liked throughout East Asia and at the very least, they're not disliked. And this is a country that punches well above its weight on the international stage, considering the size of Taiwan. So this is a generation that's grown up to be rightfully and justifiably proud of being Taiwanese. And so they don't have the same insecurities. So this is one of these big generational gaps between the followers of Han Kuo-yu and the younger generations, who basically almost nobody in the younger generation supports Han Kuo-yu.
Every day in my classes at both at the university and at the high school where I'm teaching now, the students make remarks disdaining Han Kuo-yu. Or if something pops up that's someone is acting funny, they'll say Han Kuo-yu's name.
Right.
You know, in history. Who is this person? And I always hear Han Kuo-yu. Who's the guy who did blah blah blah? Oh, it's definitely Han Kuo-yu. He's just a figure being mocked among the under 40 crowd. So okay.
All
so right. That was Han. He was in WSJ, and there was a big rally. And who showed up at that rally? But
Hoyoi, new Taipei mayor, Hoyoi.
Yeah, we've discussed him several times.
Yeah.
He's not been very supportive of Han. In fact, he dissed him a couple of times, saying he didn't want to participate in the campaign because he's got a city to run.
Yeah, I'm the newly elected mayor, and I have a city to run, which, of course, is a diss at the KMT presidential candidate, Han Kuo-yu, who was a newly elected mayor of Kaohsiung and then basically hasn't been doing his job because, well, he's been campaigning for president. Yeah.
So Ho was on stage with him.
Yes. And now he's been up to now. He's been Hoyoi has been avoiding. He refused to be his campaign manager for New Taipei City, which normally you do, even if it's just ceremonial as a show of support. He only once that I know of appeared on stage with him this time, even though they campaigned quite a bit together with Liu Xiaoyan from Taichung.
Right.
In the local elections last year. He up until this weekend, he only showed up once at a Han rally in New Taipei City, and he showed up on stage at a totally different time.
He
wasn't photographed with him. But finally, he relented, and he showed up on stage in New Taipei City, standing next to Han Kuo-yu, and then, of course, there's Ma Ying-jeou and Wu Duan-yi and all these big shots from the KMT. And then they all raise their hands, and there's Hoyoi and Han Kuo-yu holding hands in the line of all the big shots raising their arms. So I had some speculations on why did Han relent?
Why did Ho
relent? Yes.
Because you said he was hope.
Well, there's a few things.
In the future, he's going to be president, maybe.
He's going to run. I think he's going to run for, well, I started off by saying that obviously the party's been pressuring him, and that may be a factor, but I don't think it's the only one.
Right.
Because he's bucked the party on a few things, like, you know, doing, you know, the flag raising ceremony on Double 10 Day and stuff like that.
Right.
But I think that, you know, so that may be a factor, but I don't think that pressure from Wu Duanyi did it. That's the party chair. What I do think is that he's got his eye on running either as the KMT party chair or as president in the future. And he's going to need two things. One is within the party, if he's going to continue to run under the KMT banner, he can't right now go out and be totally disloyal to the party's presidential candidate and then later demand loyalty from Han's supporters in a future run.
They're a big chunk of the party.
Right. So he, if he wants to get their support in the future, at least not their outright opposition, he's got to be a little nicer to them. The other thing is Han's supporters, the Han army. His supporters are fervent. They're rabid. They will often, they go after enemies of either real or perceived of Han Guoyu. They attack them mercilessly online. They physically attacked people. And they are fervent. They're extremely intense.
Yeah.
And if he wants to run for president, he's going to need their votes.
Yeah. Well, you and I were speculating after the show last week that that he has to make some kind of move, right? If he wants to, if he wants to go for the chairmanship, or else maybe even leave the party and move to another party, because he's clearly been dissatisfied with the KMT.
Yeah.
But this looks like he's set on staying in the KMT and maybe moving up the ladder within the party somehow.
That's a possibility.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, the KMT is still a major party, but, and this was the big news this week, they can't pay their bills.
Yeah. All that money they got from Terry Goh?
Yep.
There's no more out there because they told him to,
Yes.
When they didn't make him the candidate, they basically said, all the money you've given us doesn't mean a thing.
Yep. So I wrote a little piece also on report.tw. Yeah.
That's report.tw.
Yeah. Yes.
Every time you say that, I'm just going to echo you at report.tw. Yes.
That's dot TW, just in case you didn't get that.
Don't make me echo you again.
So, anyway, so I wrote up another piece. Again, that's another Donovan's quick take up there. And again, these are quick and dirty, short articles with thoughts off the top of my head. But the... I point out is that Wu Duanyi, and I'll probably write a serious formal article for someone, maybe KM, I don't know, but in the next week or so on this, is how really truly awful a KMT chair Wu Duanyi has been.
I can't wait to read it. He's been a disaster.
On so many levels.
Yeah.
Now, when the... Just a little bit of history for viewers who might not know this. Essentially, the KMT, when they came over from China after 1949, they brought a lot of money from China, the treasury and they brought that in. But they also, when they came in, because it was a one-party state, they didn't really distinguish very clearly between the party and the state. And what they did is they took over a lot of the Japanese colonial properties and infrastructure and nationalized others, and just outright stole some stuff from some people because, well, why not? You're a one party state, you can get away with it. So it was martial law and they could get away with it. So the party, sometimes the government would take it officially for the state.
Right.
Sometimes the party, it was just given to the party. Sometimes it wasn't even clear really which one was what. When Tsai Ing-wen and the DPP finally won both the legislature and the presidency, they put in this ill-gotten assets law, which is popular generally, obviously not with a KMT, but It's to recover prop, because it won for a long time. The media called the KMT the richest political party in the world. That was their moniker. Now, whether it was accurate or not, I don't know. But that was a frequently repeated line. And they were colossally rich. I mean, there's no question about that. So they've had a lot of their assets frozen by the Ill-Gotten Assets Committee. Now, they still have income coming in, but they should have a lot more. Now, part of their problem is institutional. They have, you know, because it's been they've been rich, they never really need to worry about money much. So they hired all these people, you know, plum patronage positions. And as Nathan Batta put it, the professional cigarette smokers and tea drinkers.
Yeah, Nathan Batta's great comment.
That was a great comment. And they still haven't gotten rid of all these people. And even the ones that they have. Now, this is something he pointed out, which I didn't know.
Yeah.
Is that they got rid of a lot of like professional pollsters and people like this who are really useful, but not the cigarette smokers and tea drinkers. And then, of course, once they get rid of all these people, then they have pensions and they have severance pay.
Yeah.
So, you know, even if they do move to cut costs quite a bit, they still are on the hook for the pensions and the severance.
It's not going to appear right away. Savings. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's going to take a while. But now, the thing is that Wu's predecessor, Hong Xiuzhu, what she did, because the law had come in and they were like really short on cash on hand, she went out and she borrowed money in her own name. And she found initially it was a mystery donor, but it turns out a massive amount of money was loaned to the party by Terry Goh's mother. That was the conduit for Terry Goh's money to go in. And he basically saved the KMT.
Wow.
So then what does Wu Duanyi do?
Wu Duanyi pays him back by arranging things so that he's not going to be the winner of the primary.
Yes. Rigged the whole thing in favor of Han Guoyu.
Yeah.
Openly. I mean, he wasn't being secretive. This is not a conspiracy theory. It came out and basically said, we want to change the rules to make it so that we can get Han Guoyu as our candidate. He flat out was saying it. To accommodate his, you know, needs and all that. So what has Wu Duanyi been doing to fix the finances of the party?
Let me guess, nothing?
That's what it appears.
Yeah.
As far as I can tell, he's done nothing. Now, keep in mind that this is a party that traditionally has as good relations with big business groups and a lot of ties, official and traditionally official, but now unofficial ties with a lot of big businesses. And keep in mind that this is a party whose traditional top leadership, the old traditional big leaders of it, like looking at you, Lian Zhan, are extremely rich. But the KMT has just announced they haven't been able to pay December salaries.
So none of those old people with tons of cash are going to kick any back to the KMT, huh?
You know, I have the sneaking suspicion Wu Duanyi just hasn't even gotten around to asking
them. That wouldn't surprise me.
He just doesn't seem organized. Like he's made no provisions. Because the thing is, the KMT gets a large amount of money in government subsidies.
Yes.
And they do get money from fundraising, at least they did in the last election. So they should be able to, and with all these wealthy people that they know and in the party, where's the fundraising been?
So and now, you know what? Wu Duanyi hasn't publicly complained, and he's a public complainer when things upset him. And there's been no public comment from saying, all these rich people in the KMT, they're not donating. He said nothing about it.
Right.
So it looks to me like Wu is not going out there and drumming up cash. At least you got to give Hong credit for finding money when they needed money.
Yeah. I mean, she bought. I mean, she didn't have time, really, with the law that passed. And so she thought on her feet. She came up with a solution and she did it.
Yeah.
She pulled it off. Yeah. You know, she had her eye on the ball and what was important.
And what happened to her? Oh, yeah, they pulled her off the presidential campaign and substituted Eric Ju in.
So, but she was the party chair after that, anyway, historically there. So, and the other thing is that, I don't know if you noticed, but Han Guoyu has just started promoting campaign merch on his Facebook page. You know, selling hats and stuff with that Taiwan Up logo. And, you know, so now he's pitching campaign merch because I think his campaign needs the money.
Yeah, they probably do.
Yeah.
There's
all the allegations that he was given money or money was funneled in via China, which we talked about last week. And he said not one NT has come from China into his campaign. Did we talk about that last week?
We did talk about that last week.
Good. Yeah, we met up on Wednesday, and sometimes our personal conversations and what we talk about on the show get a little muddled in my head.
So speaking of campaign managers,
yes,
Han has named Eric Zhu, who was the candidate who replaced Hong Xiuzhu in the last presidential election.
Yep.
And
he was the party chair at the time.
Yes, that's right. So it looks like there might actually be some sanity behind that campaign.
Yeah, I mean, he was a fairly well regarded mayor of New Taipei. He, as far as I know, he did not an inspiring job as a chairman of the KMT, but a capable job.
Yeah.
So he seems to be a capable administrator, and you know.
But when you're looking at all this for the last, say, you know, since 2000, people at the under the top leadership have been demanding that they have a youth movement. 2000 election, 2004, 2005 chairmanship election. Remember when Ma Ying-jeou was running against Wang Jinping and there was the SK-2 movement?
Oh, right, yes.
Right? To bring in SK-2's of whitening cream. And it's supposed to make you look younger. And then young people in the KMT wanted to SK-2 the KMT, right?
Yeah.
Wanted to make it look younger.
Right.
So this is this long-term thing going on. And still, there's no sign anywhere in this party that they're actively promoting and recruiting and trying to get younger people up into positions of authority. They keep reshuffling the same names. And you saw this on the party list especially. That was like a strong signal that the KMT, intergenerational change has not yet hit the KMT the way that it has hit the DPP.
Yeah.
Where Tsai Ing-wen is actually the president, but not from the generation that carried out the revolution.
Yeah.
So she's the first, she was actually the sign that however turbulent and difficult it was, the DPP has passed through that period.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the KMT still hasn't. So.
And there seems to be two things going on here. One is that traditionally, when they did do, they actually used to be better, at least, at generational change. Because they brought up their kids. They brought their kids up through the ranks.
All their kids are Taiwanese now. Or they went to the U.S.
Oh, yeah. They've all got, you know, like Han Guoyu's, you know, daughter has got an apartment in Vancouver. Or Jason Hu's kids are German. And Ma Ying-jeou's kids are American.
Ma Ying-tai's kids are German, too.
Yeah. So, I mean,
Jason Hu's daughter, isn't she an English movie star or something?
She was in Bridget Jones' Diary. One of Bridget Jones' diaries.
Something like that. Yeah. Yeah.
She's had some minor roles in some movies in the UK. And she married, I think, a Hong Kong movie star.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember hearing that. So there's all this. So the next generation, right? Sean Lien's kids.
Yeah. They can't run.
They were Canadian.
Yeah. They can't run because they have foreign nationality.
All of them.
They have no interest in running.
Anyway.
Before they brought up Ma Ying-jeou was a second generation, Hao Longbin's second generation, Sean Lien's a second generation. All of these are the kids of these big KMT figures.
Yeah.
Well, this next generation, they don't have one. They don't have another generation, and they don't cultivate fresh talent from outside of their families. And Wu Duanyi's gone backwards on this. Hong Xiuzhu, and when Eric Chu was the chairman and Hong Xiuzhu was a candidate, they made some efforts at least. Hong Xiuzhu, she was tone deaf, but she did make a lot of efforts to speak to youth.
Right.
Now,
she didn't know how to do it.
But she was trying. and then Eric Chu actually did put some people like Jason Hsu and some others on the party list who were younger to try not as many as they should have and not a lot, but they did have some So there was some, you know, there was some movement in that direction. But this latest, again, another colossal misstep
by Udoni.
By Udoni, because here's what he picked. It was all old guys.
Right.
Almost all mainlanders who make up 10% of the population or so. And old guys. And the thing about is that when you become a legislator, whether you're party list or not, that's a good chance to be interviewed on TV. It's a good chance to appear on the TV talk shows.
Right.
It's an opportunity to build a brand name.
Right.
So the only real up and comers I can think of who are younger are Johnny Chang.
Yes.
Yen Quan Hung. Both of them are, but I don't see him going very far.
No, he's never going to get out of Dajia.
No, I don't think he will. No. Johnny Chang, Jiang Qichun, of the Black Faction in Fengyuan here in Taichung. He might go places, but he's not a mainlander. That's his problem. Then there's
same with Hou Youyi.
Yeah.
The new Taipei City Mayor.
Yeah. And then the other potential legislator who might go places if he wins his election. Now, this is a very fascinating race. Is Wayne Chang.
Oh, right.
Jiang Wan'an, who is the grandson, great-grandson of Chiang Kai-shek, and the grandson of Zheng Jingguo. But what's interesting is he didn't know he was the grandson until he was late teens or 20s.
Wow, that must have been a shock.
Yeah. He didn't know that he was the grandson of, and then so originally he grew up with a different surname.
I wish you'd stop talking about the grandsons of Chiang Kai-shek because yeah. I was alive when Chiang Kai-shek was alive. This means so I'm really, really old. And folks, report.tw.
report.tw. But anyways, but he's running, and this is one of those races that. That everyone's watching is the DPP. So he's a really handsome young guy.
Yeah.
He's a good looking guy.
Yeah.
And he seems actually reasonably, you know, like a fairly solid guy.
And he's written some criticism of the KMT and he's come out with some really pro-democracy stuff too.
He
thinks like that generation.
He voted at least it's on some of the provisions for marriage equality, bucked the party there. So he's running in Taipei, in a district in Taipei. I think it's Zhongshan North or something like that. Anyway, I'm not Taipei. But he's running against Enoch Wu. Of the DPP, who's also a young guy with some military background, and he's super fit, and he's another good-looking young guy. He wrote that piece for the New York Times, and so he's a real up-and-comer. So it's this battle between two hot young guys, basically. And so a lot of people are watching this. And it's in Taipei, so the field is probably balanced toward Wayne Chang. But, you know, Enoch Wu's really kind of – he's getting a lot of attention.
Yeah.
He was on the Brian
show. He's really good.
He was on the night-night show.
Oh, that young Brian. A lot of young people watch that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's a good show. I watch it sometimes.
And his sister operates the Ghost Island podcast, right?
Emily, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
I think she's Enoch Wu's sister. Yeah.
Okay.
So he's going to be good. Even if he doesn't win this election, there's good things will happen to him.
No, it's brave running against Wayne Chang. I mean, in a KMT favored city, I mean, that was a pretty bold move.
Okay. So what else is happening this week? The DPP is going to pass the anti-infiltration bill.
Looks like it. Yeah.
Yeah.
KMT is obviously very much against that.
So what else is going on? You know, the KMT has been now, what, like five elections in a row claiming that the DPP either has or will wreck the economy.
Yep.
The KMT drumbeat is always that the DPP is bad for the economy. But Ma Ying-jeou pretty much drove a truck through the possibility of supporting that thesis since he was way worse for the economy than Chen Shui-bian.
Well, I mean, because there was a perception, and there was a lot of truth to it back in the day, that the DPP couldn't administer themselves out of a wet paper bag.
Right.
And back in the early days, that was pretty true for a lot of them, of the DPP figures. And Liu Shouyin was a notable example of a successful administrator. But most of the DPP administrators back in the day, they were great at organizing protest rallies and writing articles against the KMT. but that didn't mean that they knew how to run a government.
Yeah.
So they were, they just weren't personality wise. They weren't.
Chenju was talking about that in
Chenju and
the former mayor of Kaohsiung, yeah. One of the Kaohsiung Eight, the Human Rights Day protest people who were arrested and then tried by the KMT.
Yep.
Back in the day.
So Annette Liu took over Taoyuan County. Chenju ran
Kaohsiung.
Kaohsiung.
Yeah.
I think those are the two who came out of the original.
Yeah, but, you know, yeah.
Out of that group. Founding generation, yeah. Who got thrown in jail and all that, who actually had skills to run things.
Right.
But yeah, obviously Annette
Liu. Linda Rigo made this point years ago in a really nice little talk where she pointed out that those guys who were running the revolution, then they started the party. The party was taken over by lawyers, right?
Right.
So Chen Shui-bian and Su Zhansong and Frank Xie were lawyers for the Kaohsiung Eight.
Yeah.
And the lawyers had a completely different way of doing things. They were on time. They were smart.
Yeah.
They were, you know, they were organized. They could all talk well, right?
Yeah.
And the activists who had started the revolution, they weren't good at those things.
No.
So and Chenju, again, she said that in her, if you can find it, it's on
Focus Taiwan.
No, which is on
report.tw. You can find the article linked to there with some quotes, some very key quotes, which I thought were particularly good, on report.tw.
So anyway, here's the KMT accusing the DPP of being incompetent on the economy. And meanwhile, the growth numbers for the third quarter this year on year, up 2.9%. And the island's getting a huge boost from the trade war and from companies relocating back to Taiwan, apparently.
Of course, there's number two biggest beneficiary.
Yeah. So, and now it's looking like we might actually reach 3% growth for this year, which would be really great for a mature economy like this one.
Yeah.
So
unemployment's low.
When you hear these
wages
claims,
wages have been rising.
Wages are rising, unemployment going down. A lot of good news.
Unemployment, I think, stable.
Not all of it stable at a low level.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when you hear these attacks, you can respond by saying, well, actually, that's not the case.
But Mike, how can we possibly prosper without more business with China?
We have to save the ROC by getting closer to China and become international by getting closer to China.
Yes.
Well, you can see that when Han Guoyu was talking today about, us Taiwan going downhill and declining and being isolated and not having any respect. The obvious connection then is, well, we need to get closer to China to rectify these problems, which was essentially Ma Ying-jeou's argument back in his elections. So the KMT has not made any progress on these arguments. And again, that's Udwani not saying we need to change the way that we approach elections to appeal to whatever.
I mean, I think actually when Ma Ying-jeou made the case, he made a better case, and it was a better case to be made at the time.
Right.
Xi Jinping wasn't president. China was not anywhere near as oppressive or as hostile. It was hostile, but it wasn't as hostile as now.
Right.
And at the time, there were no three links. And this was something that, and the three links, by the way, were basically transportation, direct transportation links between Taiwan and China. All traffic had to go via Hong Kong or a third country.
Yeah.
And so what happened was, and so I supported Ma Ying-jeou in 2008. I wanted him to win. And because the three links were necessary, because what was happening during Chen Shui-bian's era is there was a massive amount of businesses did move over to China.
Right.
Now, there's not necessarily anything wrong with that, although he kept touting these export numbers, which are great, but it was Taiwan exporting the factory machinery, which was really kind of depressing. But also what was happening is that because the three links weren't there, and I experienced this because I was doing business in China for a while, is it would cost like 20,000 NT and take the entire day because you'd have to get to Taipei, you'd have to get on the plane Italian, you get to Hong Kong, and then you have to get another plane from Hong Kong to wherever it was going in China. So basically, it was very expensive, very time-consuming. So while it made sense to move a factory making, say, for example, cheap plastic buckets, you know, labor is too expensive in Taiwan to make these things. I mean, right. You know, it's a no-brainer factory processes for, you know. But the thing was, is that Taiwan didn't really initially want to move the back end people, R&D people, maybe not with plastic buckets, but with other products, the R&D people, the marketing people, the sales people, and the back end people. They would have preferred to keep a lot of that here. The problem was, is that they also have to be able to work with the people on the factory floor. And so the lack of the three links meant that they were taking the back end people. They were who would have been paid similar salaries in China anyway.
Right.
They just moved them lock, stock, and barrel to China. And so the three links helped slow that process. So I think that Ma had a better case initially.
Right.
By 2012, I wasn't so supportive anymore because I was afraid of what he'd do in his second term.
Yeah. ECFA was a bad, bad move.
Yeah. But the initial three links, I think that he was right. I think that those needed to be done.
Yes, of course. That's why the DPP started out negotiating with them even before that. So Ma actually picked the low-hanging fruit.
Yeah.
That the DPP had established.
They established the three mini links the DPP did.
But I mean, they had carried out negotiations with China, but then China refused to negotiate with them.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
all that was out there.
Well, all right, we're over 30 minutes, so we got anything else?
Only that Taiwan News has decided not to call Xi Jinping president anymore.
Yeah. Good on the Taiwan News.
Yep. Yeah. I hope the other news organizations here follow suit.
Yeah. Very briefly, the title of Xi Jinping is that the Chinese Communist Party tries to portray him as a president because that confers a lot more legitimacy, like democratic legitimacy. But the reality is that his title is chairman or secretary general of the Chinese Communist Party. He's chairman of the country, like Chairman Mao. He's Chairman Xi. That's his official title. But the Chinese state media in English uses the term president because it sounds better. The other distinction the Taiwan News is also going to start making, which is another good one, is that they're going to refer to China as the people in the historical country and communist China as the current regime, separating the government from the people in the country.
Yeah, that's a good idea too.
It's a very good idea. Now they're not they're calling on other publications to follow their lead. Actually, some other publications have been doing it for a while,
but it's good.
But the fact of the matter is, it's an important step forward, and I do hope that some other publications do take that as lead. So,
all right,
yep.
All right, guys. So remember, report.tw. All right. See you next week.
All right.